Blog Talk Radio.
There's some dangerous large carnivore out there.
And I saw that bird kick a young deer off the road from a mile away.
And it was just about getting dark, and we started panicking, running down the bridge, not really having any clue what was throwing rocks in our vicinity, good-sized rocks. And I stopped long enough to get a 357 out of my backpack and looked back, and that's when I saw it. I saw one.
For a week, the town of Defiance was being harassed by a werewolf. And it's actually attacked two railroad workers, killed livestock. You know, just a lot of weird stuff that was going on.
Everybody, Monster X Radio, welcome. Johnny Bigfoot here, February 16th, 2014, and with me tonight is Shane, as usual.
Hey, Johnny, how we doing, man? Doing great, man. Another great show lined up tonight. I'm glad to be here, as always.
Nice. How are things over in Oregon?
You know, going pretty well. The weather's out here. It's just been bucketing down rain. It's been pretty nasty. Just got back from Guy Edwards' Hopsquatch. Had a great time down there listening to Gunnar Monson talk about Bigfoot and a little bit about his coffee, Sasquatch Company. And he'll be on later on in the second half of our show to talk about Bigfoot and, of course, a little bit about his Sasquatch coffee company and whatnot. But the Hopsquatch event was phenomenal. As usual, just found out Cliff Brockman will be at the next one a month away. Always a great venue and event that Guy Edwards puts on. You know, we've had him on the show before here, and he's a great supporter of ours, and we support him too. So, anybody ever comes out to Portland, I recommend going to the Hopsquatch events because, it's not just the presenters that you can interact with. It's also a lot of the Bigfoot community that go to these events. A lot of newbies, a lot of people have been around the block for a long time, and a lot of intelligent, smart researchers. So if you're ever in the area, I highly recommend going out there.
Does he just put these on randomly, or is there a set day?
Yeah, usually they're always on a Sunday, and usually it's I think it's the second to last Sunday of the month, basically. I mean, it does vary, but it's always on a Sunday, and it's about a month, out, so it really depends on the guests sometimes. Takes a lot of organizing, because some of these guests, they're from out of town, out of state, and well organized, and you can find, links to the Hopsquatch events on GuideWord's Bigfoot Lunch Club, which is on Facebook and on, online. Just look up Bigfoot Lunch Club. And if you can't go, definitely look up the Bigfoot Lunch Club. He'll give a breakdown of the events and whatnot. And if you ever have any questions or know of somebody that may be interested in being a presenter or a talker at one of these events, hit up Guy Edwards. He's always looking for guests. He's very open-minded when it comes to Bigfoot. So really nothing with him is off the table because he likes hearing from everybody. So, it's a very, very honest and open venue.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Neat deal he puts on.
Yeah, great deal he puts on, you know, and like I said, I recommend it highly. So,
but, was the weather tolerable?
Yeah, it's all indoors. So, you know, the events are always indoors. At the, this year, I think predominantly they're all going to be at the Lucky Labrador Brewery and whatnot. And it's a great venue, large hall we have set aside just for us, and there's servers and whatnot. So it's a good place to grab a meal, have a beer, and talk Bigfoot. So, and, you know, they have awesome beer there. So I highly recommend going there just to even just kick back and relax. It's a very nice atmosphere, you know. And our guest tonight, Mike, one of our guests tonight, Mike Leone, he was there tonight and or this earlier today, and you know, I got to chat with him a little bit and whatnot. So, Mike, are you there, man? You there?
I'm here. How's it going?
Good, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good.
All right.
Okay. Well, a lot of fun again, as usual.
Yeah. I mean, you've been to quite a few of these Hop Squatch events. Yeah. You know, what's your overall impression of them?
It's fun. There's always something to look forward to, you know, each month. And, you know, there's always a few new faces there that pop in, and some have had experiences. Other people are just interested. And then there's always the people that are there in the bar that don't know what's going on, and then they kind of get a little interested in and start asking some questions. So they're peeking through the windows at our presentation and stuff, and it's kind of funny watching their reactions and stuff. So it's always fun going down there.
Absolutely, and a lot of those people, too. Some of them, there's been one time that I was there that somebody actually did not know about the event going on and came in and shared their encounter with me, which I thought was really awesome. You know, like you said, people peered in and kind of wondering what's going on, and, you know, you get the usual looky-loos, but you never know what interest you can spark in somebody from the outside that might trigger, you know, a comment or an experience that they've had. So, it's like I said, it's a great venue, and I don't think there's a better spot in the States to have something like this. Oregon, just, you know, it's such an awesome experience all around.
Yeah, you know, Portland, keep Portland weird, so it fits right in with everything. No one really looks down at you for it. It's more interesting than other people.
Exactly, man, exactly. But moving on from the Hop Squatch, you know, Mike, I've had a lot of interaction with you. We've gone to a lot of the same events. We've been out in the field together, you know, a little bit, you know, and I hope to do some future things with you. I know we've talked about doing some snowshoeing and whatnot, but, you know, give
yeah,
me
yeah, it's there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know. It's the place
no,
we
finally.
Want to go to. Yeah, finally. Give the audience here a little background on, you know, your background
yeah.
and
yeah.
what got you interested in Bigfoot, and then we can go into your encounter.
Yeah. So I grew up in New Jersey, of all places, and I got into the whole Bigfoot thing in the 70s, watching In Search Of was one of my favorite shows as a kid. And, you know, I was the one in, like, third, fourth grade doing book reports on Bigfoot, UFOs, Loch Ness, and getting all these little notes on top of my report from my teachers going, you're into some really interesting stuff. But, yeah, I used to go to my local library and check out whatever books they had on Bigfoot and stuff. And so, you know, I moved out here to Portland in 2005, and, you know, I'm in the woods a lot, and I just love it out here. And I do a lot of mountain biking and stuff, so I combine that in with my Bigfooting, and it really takes me way out into the woods and mountains, and it kind of leads to some encounters and just good places to explore. It's fun.
And that's predominantly how you go out in the field, is on a mountain bike? I mean,
yeah,
predominantly?
I drive to an area, and then I'll get on my bike and explore a new area, or, you know, some of the same areas that I like. And, you know, there's a lot of, there's this, as you know, miles and miles of forest roads, and then there's the older, like 30, 40-year-old forest roads that aren't in any use anymore, but you can bike them and hike them, and you know, some of them don't go real far. Other ones go way back, and you're, before you know it, you're in the middle of nowhere, and it's great, actually. I find it a lot of fun. And then you get off your bike and hike around and look for tracks or whatever.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, you know, knowing what kind of got you into Bigfoot and whatnot, you know, it was when you go out mountain biking, I mean, is that your main objection now, is to go out there and look for Bigfoot, or are you just enjoying mountain biking in general?
Well, yeah, both. I love the workout and trucking up and down these forest hills, and it's good to explore, and then you can find a place you can drive to that night that you may want to, you know, spend the night out there, because you know, you can do all the mapping and looking on Google Earth and stuff, but until you really get out there, you don't know what the terrain's like. And you can find these little dead-end quarries at really good spots. And then, you know, you always have that spot down for future use. And so it's a good way to get out there and find new areas to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You can cover a lot of ground quick on a bike. Did you do this stuff in Jersey then?
A little bit, as far as
did you ever go looking for the Jersey Devil?
No, I've camped down there at the Pine Barrens, but I was never. It's more of a myth, the Jersey Devil and story, but it is a spooky area down there. I won't lie. I mean, finding Bigfoot did just shoot an episode down there, and talking with Cliff, he was pretty impressed at the terrain down there. But I don't think there are any Bigfoots running around South Jersey, but
yeah, they just did a Monsters and Mysteries where one of the segments was out there. It was pretty cool.
I mean,
it looked like a spooky place.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of wildlife, that's for sure. But you never know.
Yeah, we've had guests on the show before that some of that areas are prime research area, and or they've been out in that area, and you know, and it's an interesting area, that's for sure, and it's got plenty of habitat and wildlife and food. So, you know, who knows? You know, I've never been there personally. Interesting little area. But, you know, being out here in Oregon now, you know, when I'd like to get into your encounter a little bit. So
yeah,
how
doing
did
both.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. How your original encounter, you know, how did that come to pass?
Yep.
And, you know, I know the story, but you know, I like to fill in the audience and whatnot. So, if you don't mind, touch up on that.
Yeah, so it was the end of July 2009. I was out mountain biking for the long weekend in Skamania County. And so it was a Sunday. I was actually on the other side of Skamania County. I was mountain biking the Lewis River Trail, which is just a great area. Really hot this weekend. It was really hot, and so I got done biking, soaked in the river. It was just beautiful. And then I made my way over to Mount St. Helens, which I was going to bike the Ape Canyon Trail the next day, which is another great area. So, yeah, it was a Sunday night, and I was parked right off Forest Road 83, which runs right in front of the south side of the mountain.
Yeah.
And you just have a perfect view of the mountain. It's just one of my favorite spots just to chill and relax. And it was one of those days you just couldn't wait till it got dark because it was just so hot. And then, so, yeah, I got out to my spot, and I was just relaxing. And it was the night came, it cooled off. It was really, felt really good. And so, yeah, it was about a little before 11, and I'm just sitting in my chair, relaxing. No one was out there. The last car pulled out about an hour ago before that. And, you know, it was all quiet, and then boom, all I heard, it was this whoop, 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 like really loud and clear coming from about a half mile where the woods was. And then almost immediately was replied by a, oh, howl off in the distance, and they went back and forth for about 10, 12 seconds, and then the one that was whooping whistled twice and was like, psh, psh. And that ended everything. It just, and I just stood there in awe. I was just like, just totally blown away, because in those few seconds, this everything changed. You know, I believed everything on the evidence and I was a believer, but after that, I was like, wow, these things really exist. And I just stood there and chilled going down my spine. And I didn't have a recorder with me. I had my little video camera in the car. So I went in my car and grabbed it, thinking, all right, there's going to be more. And there was nothing. So I waited maybe about 20 minutes, and then I decided to walk down the road to where the woods was. It's about a half mile or so. And you go down to the end there, and there's like two parking lots, little parking lots, one for the Ape Canyon Trail and one on the right for the Lava Canyon Trail. And they were empty. There's no cars. There's no one back there. So I took the one little trail in between both of them, and I walked in the woods a little bit, and I admit I was scared because I'm like, there's really a Bigfoot right in here. I just sat down and listened. Yeah, I was alone, and nothing happened. I didn't hear anything else that night. I stayed up till, I don't know, maybe 2:30 in the morning and heard coyotes and stuff, but nothing else. And, you know, to me, it was just two Bigfoot. They were, it was a really hot day, and they were just locating each other, I think. And, yeah, I just was in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, with that, I mean, what made you, I mean, first of all, how far away would you say those calls were? And second of all, you know, what made you think that those were Bigfoots and not some other animal?
Well, the one that was whooping, it was fairly close. It was up on the hill, right at the end of the road, maybe 3/4 of a mile, but with the terrain there, it's so open. The sound just traveled. It was so clear.
Yeah, I know
the
area
well. Nothing makes those sounds. Nothing whoops and whistles. And with the howl we're playing it, I mean, there's no animals that make that.
Yeah. Being devil's advocate a little bit. I mean, I've talked to you about this, but for the audience, you know, what made you believe it wasn't another person out there,
exactly. You could tell it was so organic and like powerful, and it sounded just like the on the Moorhead recordings is the whooping, and just the whistle part. I mean, it just was like,
yeah.
Like, okay, I know where you are, and boom, everything just got silent. Yeah, there's no one back there because there's no cars there. You can't hike in or anything.
Right, so exactly. You can't hike in there.
It was before Finding Bigfoot was on the air, so it wasn't like there's a lot of people out doing calls.
Yeah.
And another thing that's a little interesting, on Cliff's site, Cliff recorded on himself about 2 weeks earlier. He got some recordings of some howls, and it was about 50 miles or so, a little north of Mount St. Helens Park. And I talked to him about it. I'm like, it could have been the same creature, you know. I don't think there's a lot of these guys running around in that. Just by coincidence, it was 2 weeks before I had my encounter there. He recorded some, and it's pretty faint. It's on his website. You can check it out.
Okay. We'll need to post that on MonsterX for sure.
Yeah, it's just... it's possible, but what I heard, man, if I only had a recorder. After that, I bought a recorder, and I have one going all the time.
Yeah,
you never know.
Oh, no, I understand. You know, I've been in those scenarios, and I'm like, oh, I'm not prepared, and it sucks.
Yeah.
You know, it sucks. And you probably, with your video camera, you know, it was a, you know, you're just not prepared for something like that. You know, people go, oh, you know.
Yeah, I didn't even have it on me. It was in my car because it was dark. I wasn't. And I wasn't even like, well, I was out there because I know it's a good area for Bigfooting, but I was like really tired and just relaxing, enjoying the night and this clear, starry night. And then boom, like everything just changed in a few seconds. My whole world got rocked in a good way.
Yeah. that's Skamania. I mean, that area there, it really is a not only just a beautiful area, but it's an amazing area with a lot of history. I mean, a lot of history.
Yeah, there's a lot of encounters, and this is what you'll hear on Finding Bigfoot. I'm sure it's going to be edited way down tonight,
yeah.
But
that's right.
The story I told. So
yeah.
So you're going to be on the season finale for Finding Bigfoot tonight then, right?
Yeah, you'll see me at the town hall with Matt and Renee. And so, yeah, that's my story of the first one out by Mount St. Helens there. And it is. I go out there a lot. There's a lot of wildlife. There's elk running all over the place, coyotes and stuff. But during the day, like that area, it's pretty amazing. Like that one was just sitting on top of the hill, safe and sound. And there's a lot of people hiking, mountain biking through there during the day. And it was probably just laying low because it was really hot. And, yeah, once everyone left, it definitely didn't know I was there because I was far enough away, out of view, and I was alone. I was quiet. And, you know, I'm almost positive it thought there was nobody around. So it kind of helps when you go out alone like that because you're not talking or anything, and you can get lucky. And I got lucky that night for sure.
Yeah, you know, those events are rare. You know, I've heard whoops off from a distance, but never up close. You know, and it's something I bring my recorder with me religiously now. You know, Larry Turner in our chat room, I've been out with him, and we've recorded whoops, you know, both on different recorders in different areas, and, you know, they're pretty profound. So, but, you know, something I never leave home with. If I'm not going to bring anything, I always bring a recorder.
You know? Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, you never know.
Do you have it running the whole time, or do you wait till you hear something?
I have mine running the whole time, the whole time.
Yeah, I have
when
two.
We get to camp,
one,
it's running.
Yeah, one running all the time, and then I have one on voice command. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah, now I go out with two.
Sweet.
Yeah,
so,
no, I recommend bringing more than one for sure. You know, like you said, one for your base camp, if that's what you're kind of doing, and you know, we place ours out in the field.
Yeah,
you know, locations, and it's really neat when you get them record. You know, on two different recorders, the sounds. You know, it kind of backs up a lot, but you also get you know, you get a lot of information from two different recorders. So you know, I'm looking to get more recorders. So you know, I've been out with like I said, Larry Turner, and we bring a couple out there and record. So you know. The more evidence you can pile on a recorder of a sound, the better. You know, it just backs it up and you break it down.
What kind
too.
Of recorders do you guys use?
I mainly use Tascam. You know, Tascam is just my go-to. It's just a really
I know Steve Coles posted that blog with a couple that he recommended or that he uses during his outings.
You know, Olympus, Tascam, Sony, they all got some great recorders out there. It doesn't have to be something real expensive.
Yeah, a little Olympus and a little Sony with the extended mic that you plug in. It picks up sound much better.
Extended mic,
get a
huh?
little better one, too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
Johnny
a little extended
a
mic
that
plugs
one.
In instead of using the built-in mic. The little extended one picks up sound much better.
Oh, nice. So if you have one running the whole time, is that going to make noise, you know, if you're walking, how would
you
carry
it,
that around?
You know, you have to, you know, if you have one on you, yeah, you're going to pick up everything. You're going to pick up, you know, a lot of people put them in their camp at night and you hear people snoring or turning in their tents and you kind of, you know, you have to kind of know your sounds and differentiate between them. But, you know, the ones that we put off on the, you know, sometimes, you know, they're pretty distant from camp, you know, you're not going to hear any
sound.
Yeah,
that's what I do.
I mean, occasionally you'll pick up. Yeah, occasionally you'll pick up sounds from camp if you're talking loud. You know, if you are talking loud, but if they're far enough away, you're going to pick up either just animals or whatever you know else is out there. You know, but you're not going to pick up you know your sounds from walking by unless you're walking right by them.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's key to me. You know, it's good to have one in camp because, you know, whether it's voice activated or one you can turn on if you're hearing stuff, but it's also good to do it a distance away. You know, if you're camping in a location And you can place the, you know, if you have multiple recorders, you can place them, you know, east, south, you know, west, north, different locations. And, you know, because a lot of the stuff that we record, you don't pick up with the human ear, mainly because, you know, the distance, or, you know, you're sleeping, you know, you just don't hear them. And then you wake up the next morning and you go out and, or 2 days later or whatever, and you're listening to them and you pick up a lot of stuff, you know, that it's just
fascinating. When you're late at night and you're done with your venturing, the one recorder I keep, if I'm sleeping in the back of my car, I put the mic through the sunroof and then plug in my headphones into the recorder, and you could hear so much more.
Yeah.
And you hear every little critter walking, crunching on the leaves. It's just, it's tough to tell where it's coming from, but yeah. Then you hear an owl hooting it. Makes you jump.
Yeah. Wait, 900 pound owl?
Yeah. Nope, not a 900 pound owl.
Okay, well, Mike, let's get into your second encounter, because this one is the one when I first met you that you shared. And and I know that I've been up to the area. I know Cliff has, and he had some corroborating evidence to go with that, but just that encounter to me was, you know, tell us about how you got to that location and, you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, this was last weekend, September 2012, and it was out by Mount Hood, off the Lolo Pass Road, you know, out by, you know where it is, out by Lost Creek, and I hadn't been to this spot in like 2 years, and on a whim, I decided to go out to this area. I'm like, let's try somewhere new. So it was late. I went out there. I didn't get out there until like 11:30, and perfect night. It was just warm. It hadn't rained in over 2 months, so it was super dry, no fires. There was a burn ban on, and so I just parked and parked right off this forest road, right off the side there, and just put out my chair. I was sleeping in the back of my car. I have a Honda Element with the back seats are out, so I have a nice memory foam mattress in the back, so I didn't really have to set up camp. So I just really was a very uneventful night. I walked around, stayed up a little, nothing, very quiet. And morning came. It was about 8:30 in the morning, and I just sat up just to take a look around, because I got there at night, and right off to my left, there was a Bigfoot right there walking away from me, and I watched this for about 3-4 seconds, and it rounded the bend in the forest road and out of view, and I was just like, no effing way. I was just like, damn, and then I just jumped to my front seat. I grabbed my camera from my door. I'm like putting on my sandals, and I can hear the blue jay squawking at it. And I got out of my car, and I think the one mistake I made, I slammed the car door behind me, and I think it heard that. And it, by the time I got around that bend, I was expecting it to be right there or something, and it was gone. And so I walked down the road. I have videos going. I'm like thinking it's still got to be close, and I'm looking on the sides of the woods, see if it just ducked in the trees, and the road kind of burned off about 50-100 yards at the end there, and I'm looking for tracks, and, you know, there was tracks of horse, because people were horseback riding, people tracks, and so I'm just, like, totally in shock. And then just a few minutes later, a car comes down the road. I'm like, oh, maybe this was it. Maybe it was a person or something. And it was this young guy. He was a bear hunter, and he had a little infant in the car seat. And he's like, he was just scouting bear places to go bear hunting that fall. And he's like, you haven't seen any bear around, have you? I'm like, no. I think I just saw a Sasquatch. And he looked at me like, it was kind of funny. And so, yeah, it wasn't a person. It was clearly a Bigfoot. You could see the broad back, and, you know, it had no neck. It's definitely got the short, little, hunchy neck, big shoulders. The arm when I walked around the bend, I could see the left arm just kind of whip out. And it was just walking in a blissful manner, very quiet. I mean, they definitely got some kind of pads on their feet because I didn't hear anything scrunching on the road or anything. And I don't know what it was doing or what, but it was definitely wasn't supposed to be there. I mean, it was 8:30 in the morning. It was daylight for a while. And yeah, I don't know what happened.
Were you the only person out there?
Yeah. There's a campsite. There's a Riley horse camp about 50 yards down the road that was closed off. This was a Friday morning it happened. And there was another camp a little bit down further. And, yeah, the campsites were both closed. There was nobody within about 2 or 3 miles. And there was only one direction to come down that way. So,
right.
Yeah. It was a Bigfoot.
Can you describe what it looked like from what you saw? I mean, you only saw so much, but can you describe?
Yeah.
It was
dark brown to black, kind of like Patty, you know, just broad shoulders. Like I said, I could see the no neck. I really didn't see the feet or anything. It, you know, happened so quick. And I would say it was about 6 to 7 feet tall. And it wasn't ginormous, but I think it was like an adolescent that wasn't where it should have been. It was out being an adolescent because about a half hour or so after this all happened, and I'm still just looking around for tracks, I heard a crazy vocalization come from way back in the woods. It was like, rah! Like it made it back to its planet. It was getting yelled at. That's the only thing I can make from it. It wasn't like any other animal. And I was just like, oh, it just made it back. It's definitely not around here. And so, yeah. Later that day, I called Cliff, and I'm like, dude, I just saw him this morning. Go check it out. And he went down to the area, and, you know, there's no tracks. I mean, the ground was so dry. You could see some impressions in the sand. You know that area. It's so sandy. And
yeah, I've been to that. I've camped there and had a few things happen out there. Yeah. And, you know, I the reason I made it out there was not actually because of your story, because I met someone else that had an encounter.
Yeah.
You know, out in that area. Not a sighting per se, but had some crazy stuff going on there. That actually was there camping with her horses. And
yep.
She had some stuff going on there, and I went out there, and it's, you know, you think of a camp, you know, like a horse camp, you're like, oh, well, how remote can it be? It's pretty remote. It's back up in there, and there's streams, and you got the mountains in the background. Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
Is this a national forest, or...?
Yeah, it's Mount Hood National Forest.
If you look at a map, it's pretty. It's funny. Mount Hood is just so phenomenal. It's so big and vast. You got, you know, so many rivers and lakes up in this area. You know, they have camps that back up to the forest in a lot of these areas. But just beyond that, it's just pure wilderness. Just pure, you know, trees and you know, lakes and whatnot. But it is very hard to find a track. Not just because of the pine needles and stuff, but the ground, even with some rain, it's really firm. You know, it's very hard to find tracks in this area. You know.
Yeah, I looked all over, like which way it could have came, and we found some vibram tracks just by coincidence down a little ways. But you know, they're clearly little tiny. You could see the little stamp from the vibram shoes. What was
Cliff's impression of that of you know, your encounter and, you know, subsequently going up there and checking it out.
Well, when I called him, he was already getting ready to go out to some of his areas. So I told him, you know, go by there and check it out because I had something else. I wasn't able to meet him there. You know, there was not much evidence, unfortunately. It just didn't leave anything. But, you know, it happened. They're they're around there. They come through that area for sure.
Yeah, I don't really have a doubt they do. I was up there, and, you know, I was out there with my wife and a girl that we went camping out there with, and in the middle of the night we heard a large smack, like a stick just hit the ground not too far away from our camps, and then a boulder. It sounded like a boulder, you know, like you would hear a large boulder moving in the water clanking, but the stream that we were camping next to, it's not that big a stream. For a large
the water
boulder
levels
move,
really low, of course.
Really low, yeah.
At that time, so...
Yeah, how was your emotional and mental status when you had your encounter? Were you scared or in shock?
No,
or?
I wasn't scared. I was just, a little, just totally surprised, you know. My one friend once told me, you know, when you least expect it. And, you know, I just, I was awake, you know, for a little bit before I sat up. And, you know, I had the windows open because it was so warm that night, and I didn't hear anything walk by, and I just, when I just sat up, I was just like, whoa, don't expect to see a Bigfoot walking out of view like that, and it just, I have no idea what it was doing, if it was watching me, or just, I have no idea, it just...
Well, especially that time in the morning, you know, so many people expect stuff in the evening or at night, you know, and to see something like that during the day, especially early morning, you know, I don't know if I would have acted the same as you did. I probably would have been, you know, in awe. You know, I don't know if I could actually, unless I had something going, have the frame of mind to record, you know, just to stop and, you know.
Yeah, I had
a
recorder going. It didn't pick anything up. There is nothing. But yeah,
so
quiet. They can be very stealthy, as we know.
Very stealthy. You can hear them coming up to your camp and never hear them leave. It's something, you know, I can't explain. It's a weird thing, you know. And once you have these encounters, you know, it really changes your whole, you know, it's one thing to believe in Bigfoot, but it's another thing to know that it exists. And
exactly.
You can't explain everything. And sometimes, you know, it put you on a set path, you know. I mean, what have your encounters done for you? You know, you've been involved with the Olympic Project like I have, and, you know, it's opened a lot of doors for you. But,
other people. You know, you could tell by looking in their eye if they're really had an encounter or something. It's pretty just an amazing thing that these things exist, and it's not too hard, though, to hide in these mountains out here. I mean, it's really not. You know, they can just climb up these little ridges and hills and these thick forests, and there's no people walking up through bushwhacking, through thick spider webs and really steep inclines. I mean, they could really hang out close to human settlements and just do their thing and go unnoticed. It's not that difficult.
I got a funny story. I was out Riley Horse Camp, you know. I was checking out your area because I wanted to see where you had this encounter and stuff. And I was like, oh, okay, here it is. And I located it, and it was just tracking and whatnot. And I actually had my dog with me. And I'm going through some bushes and whatnot and wasn't paying attention to the ground. I don't know why, but I was looking up towards this hill. And all of a sudden I felt something on top of my head, and it felt like a sting. And I went, well, that kind of hurts. And I looked down. My dog's running. My dog's just taking off, running. And all of a sudden, I realized I had stepped in a wasp nest. And I got stung about 14 times, a couple times on the head and the hands. And I saw this thing, this swarm, just going crazy, not paying attention, you know. It's a big mistake. You know, usually I'm looking down at the ground for tracks. I was looking up this hill, and I stepped right on this wasp nest. And my dog's running off just like 90 miles an hour. And so I take off running, and I get back to camp, and I still have wasps in my hair, and I'm trying to pluck them out. And one of the girls I was out there with, you know, she was laughing her butt off, and I'm sitting there in pain. But, you know, it's just a little side story of that area that, you know, a little bit off trail here, I found a wasp nest. And but, I mean, that area there, though, you got this horse camp, but it's only so many people use it a year, and then it does close down for part of the year, you know, but you can still hike in there like you did, you know, and drive up in there and whatnot.
Hiking. know, I've been back there a bunch of times since then, and there's a lot of people that go hiking. There's that Lost Creek Trail, and there's another one, Burnt Lake or something trail right there. But yeah,
in this area,
because this area's
not too far.
Go there.
Right? Yeah. No. Nobody really. You go there for a reason, for your horses and whatnot. You know, to ride your horses or hike, and you're not too far away from Rhododendron, which is one of the hot spots in the U.S. for sightings, road crossings, and all that. I mean,
yeah.
It's the Mount Hood area. You know, my research area is on the opposite side of the mountain. You know, and it's but if you look at a map, you know, you're kind of blown away at how close everything truly is.
Yeah, but the way the crow flies and the Bigfoot goes,
right.
It's not too far.
Well, like you said with the Skamania thing, you know, with Cliff recording those sounds 50 miles away, really in the scheme of things, that's not that far away from,
the
crow flies.
It's a day's travel for them. They can really move, I guess, cover a lot of ground if they want. And they're in an area, you know, they may just move all around.
As a human going, trying to trek through that, it's near impossible. You know, most people stick to the trails. They don't go venturing off, because you are in bear count, you know, country, you're in cougar country. You know, I have a lot of elk in these areas and other animals, and there's a lot of obstacles in your way. You know, you could be an experienced hunter and hiker and still battle areas like that and not be able to travel, you know, swiftly.
Yeah. And I'm sure they use all the big peaks, the Cascades of landmarks. You know, they travel up and down that corridor. And, they're all probably just know their way around using those as landmarks going, you know, from Shasta all the way up to the Canadian border. They could probably just somehow they got to get over the Columbia River there, but it's still.
Yeah.
And I talked to Matt about that, Moneymaker, one day, and, he's in agreement with that, but they must use the big peaks as landmarks and places to meet or gather or something like that, whatever they do.
Right. So since these encounters, what have you been up to? And you're a researcher now. You've been.
Yeah, I go out a lot.
A lot. You go out a lot, and you go out solo.
Solo a lot, and I take people out, but most times nothing happens, it's the crapshoot. You go out, you can pick an area, you have your favorite areas, there's some new areas to explore, and most likely nothing happens, you get some elk, some owls, you wander around at night, but I've only had those two definite encounters. I've had some other things, I've heard some knocks, and found some possible tracks, impressions, which I have on video, I go, there's a lot of good places. I hit Northern Cali and, the Olympics there, just great areas up by Derek's, and the Quinault Rainforest is a good spot I like to go once in a while, but it's a never-ending adventure.
Right, it's just fun to get out, like you do the biking thing. I'm not really into the biking thing. I do a lot of hiking and fishing,
Yeah, hiking too is, coincides. It's all in Bigfoot territory. So whether you want to fish these remote lakes and they come visit mostly at night or whatever, it's all an adventure. It's fun.
Now, since you've had, your encounter up there at the horse camp area, how often do you go there now? Is that like an area you go to frequently now, or you had your encounter and that's that?
I mix it up. I was there about 3-4 weeks ago. I camped out there when we had that real dry, warm spell out here. I went out on a good night on a Friday night after work, and it was all quiet, but I mix it up. Like I said, I hit that area in like 2 years. I'm always down Clackamas, the Kalawash, or up in Skamania there, and just fate had it. I went there that night and boom, it happened. When I go up to Washington, there seems to be a lot more going on as far as wildlife. I don't know, I get a whole different vibe when I'm up there. It's just like there's always an elk or something that will come crashing through the woods, or, you know, an elk will be snorting at you right outside camp, or, you know, they bed down, and then, like, around 11 o'clock at night, you just hear this thing get up and go crashing through the woods, and you know it's an elk. It's not a Bigfoot or anything, but they're all around.
Yeah,
I've
and
seen
it takes
a lot more
of
just bear and stuff, too, out in Skamania County there. It's just, you know, there's just a lot of going on out there.
Right, and it's, and you got to spend a lot of time in the woods to differentiate between what could possibly be Bigfoot, or just, you know, your elk, your owls, your bears, your cougars, your, and people in general. You know, you got to spend a lot of time in the woods and, kind of get to know the woods and the area that you're in, and do your research there so that you're not jumping at everything. You know, so many people go out in the woods nowadays and, you know, they hear a knock or a clank or a hoot or a holler, and it's, they automatically think it's Bigfoot when, you know, more than 9 times out of 10, it's nothing other than just, you know, your natural animal, you know, just a regular animal in the woods or...
you hear owls making cackling sounds a lot, and, you know, it's not just the hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo you hear. They make all kinds
of
things.
Yeah, a lot happens in the woods. Trees fall over. I've had all sorts of weird things happen where... I was in areas where I know there was no Bigfoot, and I could walk over there and see there wasn't, but it sure scared us when it did happen.
Yeah, so the dark gets scary. It's, when it gets dark, it's naturally,
you know, make
a little
you think,
more scary.
It's like, whoa, predator? You know, I'm like, no, we're, you know, we got spots down by the river outside of the city here where we'll have fires and stuff, and tree fell over once, or a big branch, and it's just like, it made me think, though, like, this is before I was really into Bigfoot, but it made me think bear or mountain lion or just something, even though we don't have those here. There is the rare mountain lion you do get, you know, you just think, what could knock it over? But I guess just stuff happens. You know, if a tree falls in the woods, sometimes you do hear it.
Right. Exactly.
Exactly.
Not all Bigfoot related. Sorry.
Yeah, you gotta definitely take everything else away that could possibly be before you could say it, you know, it's a Bigfoot. And so, yeah, those two encounters I had were definitely Bigfoot. Everything else is, I have little things that maybe, but.
And Mike, when you go out, I mean, do you know, there's so many different approaches to going out in the field and looking for Bigfoot and Bigfoot in general and squatching and whatnot. When you go out, I mean, what do? Do you just act like a normal camper? Are you the type that goes out and does howls and knocks?
I play it pretty quiet until, you know, 12, 1 o'clock. I'll walk around. I'll just do the camp thing, let it get dark and spooky, and see what's out there first. You know, sometimes it's real active and there's owls hooting left and right. Sometimes it's real quiet and then I'll do some hooting, maybe a knock or two if it's real quiet, just to see if there's anything out there. But yeah, I'm not constantly doing yells and stuff. That's not my thing.
No, I hear you. I agree. I don't usually I go out in the field. I'm pretty much acting like a normal camper. I'm looking for signs and things.
Yeah, let them find me.
Right.
One
they're
in the area.
They're
curious. They can come find me.
Yeah, the bike thing's cool. You can really cover a lot of turf that way. I like both, I guess. I mean, it's fun to bike, but it's also fun to just stealth mode it walking.
Well, yeah, at night, I've done a couple of times where I went out on my bike at night under a full moon. It was really nice. But usually at night I'm walking and
so are you're camping
around
by yourself? Do you ever do it in a tent or?
Yeah, sometimes I tent. There's certain areas you can backpack in. Usually if I do that, I want to go with someone. But there's a lot of just remote dead-end roads that you can drive to, and then you're in the back of your car. It's just easy to set up camp and And then I set up the microphone on top of my car with the headphones, and you can hear anything, like approach, if so something's big approaching you. And I even can take the headphones and have these rechargeable speakers, so I can plug them in and kind of doze off, and you can still hear all the sounds of the forest. And usually you get waken up by an owl hooting real loud, and you jump out of your sleep. But,
yeah, oh, I had that happen to me. I've definitely had that happen, right? So now I want to have an audio recorder going, though, because that would be cool to capture that on.
Oh, it's cool just to capture just your average animal out there. It's pretty cool to hear coyotes and, you know, or an elk bark or make a call, you know, and or just owls, you know. It's pretty neat to just capture those sounds.
Yeah,
yeah, my buddy didn't know what the hell it was. He goes, is that a female Sasquatch mating call or what?
Yeah, they made elks, like, snort. This one that was up in Skamania County, I think it was last summer, and he was just right outside my camp just, like, snorting and at me and stuff. So I had a fire going, and he was right by the recorder, so I got some really clear recordings of him snorting at me. And, yeah, and then you can hear him just trot away and go on his way.
Right.
But, yeah,
nice.
It's fun.
Mike, now, just, you know, we're going to take a break here shortly, but, you know, I want to touch upon the Finding Bigfoot episode that you're involved in with. You know, what was your general experience out there? You know, I was involved in the same episode, and, you know, I enjoyed it, you know, and like I said, I tell people all the time, it is a TV show, and, you know, there's producers there, and, you know, they do a lot of editing and stuff like that. But, I mean, what was your general experience hanging out with the crew and just going out and doing a little bit of squatching?
Yeah, it was a fun weekend. You know, it was only Matt and Renee. Cliff and Bobo were in Oregon doing their thing for the episode. So I guess Cliff gave one of the producers my number, and he called me and wanted to know about my encounter. So I went out there, and it was fun. It was really cool meeting the other witnesses there. You know, the one dude, hopefully they'll show him. He had a picture of a footprint, and he found out. There's about three or four of us that had encounters around Mount St. Helens, which I thought was pretty cool. But being TV, I don't want to spoil the episode, but the two encounters they chose to investigate were, like, the ones closest where we were filming and stuff, like, make it easy. I mean,
you know, neither.
Other witness reports, you know, their activities out by around Mount St. Helens, and it's really cool because I'm like, yeah, I go there a lot. That's cool. You got some action. There's a place called Klamath Horse Camp, which there's a lot of action around that. So there's something about horse camps that attract them, no
doubt.
Something
to them. Yeah, I definitely agree. There's something to them, you know, and, you know, the thing with the Find a Bigfoot show, you don't know what they edit and what they add in and whatnot.
Yeah,
you know, it's made for...
They film it.
Yeah.
And then they send it all to LA and it gets edited, so
It is what it is. But it is you know, you're hanging out with some credible researchers and, you know, whatnot. You know, like hang out with Cliff when he goes out to the field, he's dead serious about what he does. You know, he doesn't mess around.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, and a lot of people they think, you know, these guys just sit behind a camera and get filmed and they do the thing. But you know, they're serious about it, but you know, there's two sides to that. You know, you got the producers who want to make it interesting because Sasquatching can be boring as hell when you're out in the field. It's just boring. So you have to make it interesting, and you have to make climatic scenes and all that. But, you know, I had a great experience out there. I'm sure you did too, and we got to, you know, hang out with them and do some filming and whatnot. So, you know, it's interesting, you know. But once again, it's a TV show. So, but, you know, I hope everybody tunes in and watches it and gets a little something out of it. Like you said, hanging out with other people that have had encounters and learning about their encounters and sharing their stories, you know, I've met so many people that in areas that I've been doing research that, you know, I didn't realize they have had encounters in that same area. And I was like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So, you know, you're in the right spots, and it's all a lot, too. It's being the right spot, the right time, a lot of it is. And so yeah, I've been lucky twice, and hopefully I'll get lucky again. I want to see one face to face. I mean, like
everybody does. Well, so, I shouldn't say that. They say they may want to, but when it comes down to it, they may think twice.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still as scary as it could be. I'm convinced they're very docile creatures. Unless you're trying to shoot one or hurt one like a jackass, you're okay. But you never know. We don't
know
anything, really.
Right. We don't know anything, and that's the key to, you know, and, you know, we don't know anything. You know, we may have ideas and thoughts and a little educated guesses here and there, but we really don't know anything. And that's, you know, that's what research is all about, is trying to gain, you know, yeah. But I think we're going to take a break here, Mike. It was great having you on. Really appreciate
sure, man.
And look forward to hanging out with you sometime out in the field and seeing you at future events and whatnot.
Yep, I'm sure I'll see you soon.
Sure we will.
Yeah, awesome, Mike.
All right, Johnny, take care. Have a good rest of the show.
Thanks.
You
too.
And I
just want to wish Chuck Pearl a speedy recovery. I know he's battling some tough illnesses.
Oh, absolutely,
he's still
man.
In the hospital, but I just wanted to give him a shout-out and hope he heals up quick.
Oh,
they do
appreciate
a great
that.
Show over there, so...
Right on. All right, we'll
All
be
right.
back in about 4 minutes.
All right, guys, have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Bye.
right, we are back. It looks like we got Gunner on the line.
Hey, Gunner, you there?
Hey, Gunner, how you doing?
Hello?
Okay, well, let's try the other 503 here.
Yeah, that's Gunner.
503,
can you hear me
now? Gunner?
Yeah.
It is.
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Oh, well, thanks for holding on for a while there.
Sure.
No, great to have you on the show again, man. It was a pleasure listening tonight at the Hopsquatch, Guy Edwards Hopsquatch event, and listening to you do your presentation. You know, I really enjoyed it, and I know the turnout and the crowd did. It was fascinating, and you did a great job, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Shane. Yeah, it was my first time doing that one, so it was funny because I got a couple, interesting responses from people when I said I was going to be talking about Bigfoot's brain.
Right.
So,
yeah,
but
exactly.
I'm not a Bigfoot psychologist.
No,
so.
But it's an interesting topic, and it's one that's not really been discussed, especially at the Hopsquatch events, but anywhere, you know, just to hear a little insight, you know, from you, you know, being involved with BFRO for a number of years and your amount of time out in the field and stuff, you know, it's interesting to hear, you know, feedback and thoughts from you on that subject.
Yeah, it was fun to talk about. So.
Yeah, and like I said, you did a great job. I know a lot of people were impressed, and I was, and I enjoyed it. And I know Guy will probably have you back sometime down the road to, talk more Bigfoot and whatnot and.
Yeah, I'm already working on Bigfoot's brain part two.
Excellent. The right lobe and the left lobe.
That's right, yeah. They're creative sense, so, Bigfoot the artistic side, so.
Exactly.
But how many people showed up?
What was there? Maybe 30 people, 40 people, yeah.
There was probably close to 40 people. I mean, it was, and it's a pretty good turnout. I mean, really, like I said, a lot of newbies and a lot of researchers and experienced people and people just interested in the subject in general. So it was a great turnout, and I got to get some of your coffee tonight, the 12th man, which I'm looking forward to tomorrow morning waking up and having some of that.
Yeah, you got the beast mode.
Got the beast mode, yeah. I'll be firing all cylinders tomorrow.
So appreciate that.
Oh,
yeah, I'm
absolutely
excited actually for Hopsquatch next month because they're having Cliff Berrickman. So Cliff has always got a wealth of information.
Oh, yeah, to talk about, I hope he talks about some of the Sumatra stuff, the Oran Pendek. They were giving away, this evening they gave away a few, I think they gave away a cast from there of the supposed Oran Pendek and whatnot, which I've seen, and it's dang interesting, and it's really neat. So somebody walked away with that tonight. I was hoping it was me, but it was not me.
And I did win something, so my streak is intact. I won Kurt's book. So,
oh, yeah.
Cultus. I'm excited to read it. It looks like I read some of the excerpts from it, and it he knows how to write, so that would be good.
Yeah, and it's doing well, too. It's doing real well, and, I have a copy. I have not read it yet, but I look forward to doing so.
Yeah. So I would suggest anybody that hasn't got a copy yet to go check for it on Amazon. Cultus.
Yeah,
Cultus. Kirk's last name? It starts with an S.
Oh, shoot. Now you're going to put me on the spot.
Yeah. If I had his book right here, I could tell you, but it's so delayed, basically.
Yeah, I don't have it in front of me. But, I mean, I think most of our audience knows who we're talking about. I know Guy Edwards did the cover for the book, which is awesome.
I'm excited to read it.
Yeah, likewise. Before we get into some other stuff, how's the Sasquatch, how's the Sasquatch coffee going,
It's going good. I got a little waylaid with the 12th man coffee thing. So, and I changed up the name. I went from Bigfoot Coffee to Sasquatch Coffee. I won't get into all the details, but so I've put the website for the Bigfoot Coffee, now Sasquatch Coffee, on hold.
Yeah.
But it's now back, the brakes have taken off, and it should be done any time. So it's a little more entailed than it's my first foray into internet sales. So it's been a learning experience. It's a little more entailed than just throwing up a web page, especially when you have things that have to be weighed and you're shipping online. So at any time, it should be coming. What we'll be doing is, on our Facebook page, we are directing people to actually send us an email, and then we've been calling them and completing the taking orders. So we did really well around Christmas, had a lot of people calling in. And the feedback has been great. People are loving the coffee, so I'm happy about that.
Oh yeah, no, I've had the coffee before. It really is. It's awesome. I like it better than Starbucks or a lot of the other name brands out there. It's good stuff, man. I mean, I really enjoy it. I'm looking forward to this 12th man, the dark roast that I'll be having tomorrow morning.
Right on.
Yeah.
Beast mode.
Yeah, beast mode. That's
right.
I need that. I need that in the mornings. Trust me, I get up early. So, now I wanted to talk a little bit about a research area out, on the Oregon coast, pretty close that you've been involved with, a few friends here,
right.
Them involved with, and just some of your thoughts on that area, because to me, I've been out there, and it's a fascinating area with, I found some evidence out there myself and whatnot, but what got you out in that area to begin with, and what are your general thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I had been kind of sticking to my own area for a while, and I happened to be just kind of going through some BFRO reports. And it's an area that I've always kind of found interesting anyway. And there was a report, and I think it was like in August, and it had been just like a year before. And I'm thinking, well, it's the right time of year, if they're migratory or whatever, if they're active at that time of year, that it'd be cool to go out there just to check it out. So I actually got a hold of the lead investigator, the person, which was Cindy Cadell. Cadell, is that her last name?
Yeah.
Yeah, with the BFRO, and she had, and her husband had went out and investigated an initial report. And then initial witness was actually the daughter of a gentleman named Larry, who has basically ever since that time has been going back. And, I mean, he's very dedicated to getting up there as often as he can, and has had a lot of activity. So I got hold of Cindy, and my first time up there, Cindy and Larry and I were up there, and they have kind of a routine down of things that they did, and walking around camp and doing a wood knock and then doing some calls. Well, Larry had actually injured his knee a little bit that day hiking around up there, so he actually stayed in camp, and Cindy and I, and she had her, like, I think 6-year-old grandson with him. And we walked the perimeter, and we did a wood knock, and she did a call, and then Larry did a call from camp. Well, then she and I continued around the road and came back into camp. When we got back into camp, Larry, like, said when he did his vocalization that he got a response from the east. He said first some coyotes, and then there was a different kind of howl. So he and I walked. He had a multi-directional recorder that was fairly new to him, so he was, I think this was the first time he was going to deploy it out in the field, and so he and I walked over to an area, there's a covered area where we put the recorder, and as we're walking over there was another howl from the east, and it didn't sound like, it had a different quality than, it's very similar to other reported squatch howls that I've heard online stuff. So, and we both looked at each other. Well, that's pretty cool. So, and then I think as we were walking back to where we were camped, we heard another one. So Cindy and Larry and I, and I forget Cindy's grandson's name, sat around camp, and it was interesting for the next, and I had no expectations of anything happening going up there, first time, you know, who knows.
Yeah.
We sat in camp, and starting in the east and then moving all the way through the south, and for 2 hours, just howls and whoops, and about 2 hours into it, I think it was just about midnight, Cindy was actually putting her grandson in the tent, and Larry and I were sitting outside, but she heard what we heard. I call it the crescendo. So we're hearing individual whoops and howls, and all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of vocalization, like howls and whoops and all together. And the whole time during this 2 hours this is going on, I'm listening for, you know, human sounds. So it's people, you know, and we're not hearing any vehicle traffic and no, like, you know, other conversation or what you would expect to hear. It was these vocalizations and then quiet.
Yeah.
So this, during the crescendo, I actually start, like, I must have had my head tipped like a dog, because I'm, like, listening to it, and there's a howl, but underneath the howl almost is, I best can describe it as, like, samurai chatter. So there's some kind of, I'm listening to it and thinking, listening for an English word, a word that I recognize. And, like, it goes on for, you know, a short period of time, but then nothing, then it went silent. And Larry and I both looked at each other, and what the hell was that? But,
yeah.
You know, and, like, that was super cool. So no other noise. You know, we go to bed, and I actually crashed in my Jeep, and Larry goes to his tent, and sometime around 5-ish in the morning, 10 to 5 or something, my window, and I hear a howl to the south. Then about another 20-minute, half an hour later, I hear another howl from that location. Larry had heard something at a different time, the same. And we've had other stuff happen up there. I had you were up there the night that I had my Jeep bumped into. So
yeah.
Something middle of the night woke me up. My Jeep just shook, like, one time. And I wouldn't have really thought anything about it, but then you had heard some vocalizations and wood knocks,
yeah,
and
yeah.
Larry
and
heard footsteps and
and
it seems like every time that I've been up there, we've had some kind of vocalization. The last time I went up there, it was pretty quiet.
Very quiet, very quiet.
so Larry and I, like, we're talking, why would it, you know, something make sounds? And that's our theory, and purely theory, is it, like, hunting. Because it's interesting, is, like, the 2 days prior to this visit was we had, like, thunderstorms and lightning, so we figured, you know, everything's been bedded down and
yeah,
they're out getting some protein. So pretty cool. So, and we had another time, and it was right after dark, we had some vocalizations, and I didn't feel it, but I actually think I was further back in the camp. Larry actually felt it in his chest, like a vibration. And I had a digital recorder. The terrible thing about the crescendo night was that Larry recorder didn't get turned on. It shut off like a second after he turned it on. And Cindy and I both had digital recorders with us, and neither one of us turned ours on. So,
right.
It's like epic fail. So the learning experience is, don't rely on, you know, one piece of electronic equipment. So.
Yeah. And this area, you know, it has a lot of ridges, a lot of valleys and mountains. It has, you know, it's an area that, for the most part, it'd be hard. I found it hard to find tracks. For the most part, you know, you can go down towards some of the streams and find tracks that I think I found a few out there with Larry. You know, they weren't definitive, but they were really close to tracks that I would associate with Bigfoot. And then also, another fascinating thing I found out in this area was in some of these areas that I found sticks shoved in the ground. I've never seen this anywhere else. Sticks shoved in the ground, you know, from a foot to 2 feet down, you know, just shoved in the ground with force. You know, it takes a little bit of strength to shove a stick or a branch in the ground that far. And I'm not talking about
right.
something that's small. Yeah.
Right. And we found that on another occasion. So when one of the trips up there, it was interesting because we had it was night. Something start. We had vocalizations starting like right after dark, and there's a trail that goes east. And Larry and I went up there and then cut to the south through the woods. And when we got back to camp, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, I think, and I heard a car drive by. There's a road on the other side of the car drove by, and I heard a single, like, sounded to me like a wood knock, like pop, and come back from that east side. Well, we had just been not too, and I figured perhaps it was on the north side of the trail, and we went out south side, or it could have been on the other side of the road. But another car went by, and I heard it again, it, like pop, and it was just, that was pretty interesting, daylight.
Well, yeah, to kind of back up that, you know, me, mm-hmm. the trip before last, I mean, the last trip out there, to be honest, Larry and me, you know, full moon. It was not, we really had not a whole lot happen. But the trip before that, there was a car coming down. It was really odd, too, because it was like 10 o'clock at night, and we're out there, car's coming down. And, you know, listening the next day on recorders, we heard just repetitive knocks 2 minutes before this car came down the road, and this car did a circle and they took off. And then when the car left, it was just knock, knock, knock. It was, you know, there was about 6 to 7 knocks I could figure out listening to the audio that I thought was really, really, really cool, because it was almost like, this car's coming down the road. Something's warning. Hey, there's a car coming down the road. Knock, knock, knock. Car comes around, leaves, and then knock, 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 you know, and it happened within a span of, I think, about 8 to 9 minutes or so on the recorder, you know, that we didn't pick up, you know, but during having listened to the audio, you know, the knocks are apparent. I mean, they're there. What made them? I can't say 100%, but it was like something, you know, heard this car coming, knock, knock, hey, there's a car coming, and then the car takes off, and then knock, knock. There it goes, you know. So, I mean, I mm-hmm. thought that was fascinating and interesting for sure.
In on a previous recording up there, the same thing happened in association, because there's a lot of ATVs up there.
And on
the recording later, they didn't hear it at the time, but when they reviewed the recording, when an ATV went by or was coming, they heard knocks associated with that. So, and I haven't heard that particular recording, but yeah. My first impression was really strange going up there, because during the day there was a lot of, like, guns being shot and a lot of ATV traffic, and at least during the summertime, this time of year, it's real pretty quiet up there all
yeah.
the time, but you still get a little bit of traffic in there. It was the first, the crescendo night was like, I think it started about 9:30-ish, getting closer to 10. So, but I was really surprised the night that it started. And it was not too long after dark. It also was foggy on the way in, and I was wondering, driving in, like, I wonder what, you know, how the Squatches, if they would use fog as a means of being stealthy.
Right.
Are they more active early because they're less likely to be seen? And then it kind of like, right after dark, we had something that was howling close to camp, so.
Oh, man, I wish you guys had got that on recorder, because
that one we actually do have. I think I played that for you up there, remember?
Yeah,
the,
you did. I get my dates mixed up. Okay.
Yeah. I know, when you start to, it's amazing as how much activity is, and this seems to be pretty much year-round. I know Larry's gone up there, I mean, very religiously for a solid, now we're going probably on a year and a half, almost 2 years. And he said the only time that, I mean, he's gone up there when there's been a lot of snow, and that was
like
the only time
feet,
he said that that they weren't, like, in the immediate vicinity, but he did hear stuff. It was just seemed like it was further away.
Right. Yeah, I mean, in this area, too, I mean, as far as habitat, yeah, you do have, during the day, certain times of year, you have a lot of ATVs and people in that area, and you do have people firing off shots. At night, mm-hmm. you know, during certain times of year, ATVs are going. This time of year, it's a, you know, there's not a whole lot of people out there, but you're the general area, though, you're close to the coast. You have a couple of major rivers there. You have mm-hmm. tons of deer and elk in that area. I've seen, I mean, last time me and Larry were up there, the amount of scat and tracks we found were pretty crazy. There was just a ton of elk and deer in that area. And, you know, it's an area that there's a lot of food resources. And basically, if you wanted to disappear in this area, you could. It's there's a lot of remote areas in that area as well.
Sure. And even though there's people up in that area, I mean, they're mostly on the roads and all the ATV trails and that kind of stuff. You know, there's lots of area up there that if you didn't want to be seen. And my general impression is that their bedding area is mm-hmm. is to the east of where we camp, because it
right.
seems like that's where the vocalizations have started on almost every occasion, except the time right after that it started right after dark, and it was like they were pretty close to where we camp.
Yeah, yeah. Larry's taking me down some of those roads. You know, some of those roads out there, nobody goes down. I remember driving down a certain particular road with Larry that there was no sign of activity from anybody in this area, and we it's a place that we end up putting a recorder and got some interesting stuff from this area. But you know, what are your thoughts, Gunner? Because I found some interesting tree breaks in this area, twists and
mm-hmm.
and stuff that I can't attribute to nature, man, or another animal that I know of that you know, just sheer height and strength that would take to do some of these tree breaks and snaps and twists. I mean, what are your thoughts on stuff like that nature?
Well, there's you saw the Bigfoot brain presentation, and I kind of assigned
yeah.
things a fringy designation. And tree break, you know, there's a lot of it being reported. Until I see a squatch, And there are reports of squatches snapping off trees and pushing over trees. And, you know, now I think there's a difference between tree breaks and tree weaving, where there's some, you know, to be like they are some kind of form of communication, you know, a tribal marker, a resource marker. You know, if it's squatch related, then.
Yeah.
They're not just, you know, I don't think it's just art. So it serves some function.
Right,
and
right.
That those, you know, a trail marker. And what I have some kind of intuition about that area that maybe we're it's close to a border between more than one tribe, if you will, or one family.
Yeah, or clan.
You know, squatches. Yeah, clan.
Yeah, that area,
yeah.
No, I agree with you there. You know, I found, you know, enough evidence to suggest, you know, that, like I said, some of those sticks are stuck in the ground out there in areas
mm-hmm.
that nobody goes to. I'm fascinated by that. And then some of the tree breaks and snaps are, you know, I found stuff like that on Mount Hood. I've never seen actually sticks stuck in the ground. And not even just sticks. I'm talking limbs, heavy limbs, and whatnot, stuck in the ground like they were. I've never found that in the research areas that I go to, kind
mm-hmm.
of unique to that area. But the tree twists and breaks, you know, I don't believe it's just art. It serves a purpose. There's a
yeah.
lot more, you know, to that. You know, what it is, I have no idea. And if it is Sasquatch related, obviously it means something. More
mm-hmm.
than, you know, we can fathom, or we can come up with ideas of what it means, but, you know, it's kind of like tree knocks and rock clank and all that. We can mimic those and do those out in the field, but really, we really don't know what that means.
Right. Yeah. I'm always concerned when I, you know, do a vocalization of what I'm saying, because I'm hoping that I'm not, you know, inviting them for a date.
Yeah.
I wanna, yeah. So, I want them to come in and find Bobo if they want a date.
Well,
he's a lot more squatchy than me.
Maybe we need to have a luau or something out there, you know, cook a big old pig.
What is that? We need a meat deer. Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, the area, you know, it's an area that I think it's going to produce some interesting stuff down the road here, you know, especially coming into the summer months. And, you know, I'm glad to be a kind of a part of the whole thing. I hope down the road to hear some of what you guys have heard and maybe get actually on recorder. We've recorded in this area when I've been out with Larry, howls from this area on both our recorders. From two different areas on the same recorder, and it's, you know.
I think that's an awesome, you know, an awesome way to get go about it, too, is as a corroboration of, you know, more than one recording of the same. So we're working on getting, you know, doing some of the layout of the area so that we kind of have an idea when where to go look better when we hear something or that it, like it came from zone A or it came from zone, you know,
right,
B
kind of like
or whatever,
a grid pattern,
right,
or something. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I know Larry's dead set fast on, you know, that's his area, and he's out there more than I can be out there and whatnot, but it's there's a lot of stuff coming out of this area. And it's, like I said, it's got a huge history of not just that area, but the surrounding area, you know, as far as evidence and sightings and encounters, and you're so close to that coastal range there that it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that I've always had it's interesting because that particular area has a concentration of the reports.
Mm-hmm.
If you go west, not a lot of activity in the database, but in that particular location. And I've always kind of thought because there's the, you know, one of the main highways to the coast there.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm aware of, there's only one road crossing. So there's actually a bridge there that I think they may utilize to go, you know, north and south. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, even in this general area, on the BFRO side, there's actual sightings from this area that I'm sure you're aware of. And
yeah, and there's so many sightings that don't make it into the database, too.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There's, or that. Or, yeah, how many, yeah, what, I think it was Robert Krantz was like, for every one sighting that is reported, probably 100 go unreported.
And some get reported to other people, and some are still pending.
Right. Well, I just had a conversation tonight with a gentleman who had turned in, I think, 3 reports to the BFRO and not seeing them in the public. And I had to explain to him that there's a huge backlog of reports in the BFRO because you're dealing with people, you know, volunteers and you have people coming in and going out and
exactly.
And then you get this huge backlog and there's only, you know, Well, there may be a whole bunch of people in the BFRO, some people. It takes a lot of time to do a thorough investigation of one report, and then you get these hundreds of back, you know, logged reports. And
it's quite the undertaking. I mean, really, it seriously is.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and people think that the BFRO consists of, it consists of a lot of members, but each member has an area or, you know, whatnot, and the amount of encounters and reports that come in is probably quite, you know, it's near impossible to tackle them all in a certain amount of time and you know, appease people.
right. I mean, people, and it's great. I'm happy that there's some place where people can go, you know, kind of a centralized location for clearinghouse for reports, and that BFRO is great for that. I mean, it's, you know, largest database of sightings report anywhere. So Yeah. It's just a huge, like you say, it's a huge undertaking to stay on top of stuff.
Right. Exactly. I think, Robin, are you there, Robin?
Yes, I am.
I was going to say, Robin, you know, this, Robin Swain, you know, I'm glad to have you aboard here. You know, Gunner had mentioned that you had an encounter and we talked on the phone and whatnot. I'm glad to have you on board.
Oh, it's nice to be here, Shane.
Hey, well, thanks for joining us. How long have you and Gunner, how long have you known Robin?
Oh, way too long. I don't want to give away my age. No, Rob and I graduated from high school together. So actually,
yeah.
we had a joint 50 birthday party. So.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
Shane's the young buck in the Bigfoot community.
Yeah. When I was young.
Yeah, apparently. But, Robin, you know, we talked length on the phone, and, you know, your encounter, your original encounter goes back to 1970-something, and in the, I believe, the Tillamook area of Oregon?
Yeah, yeah, yes.
Yeah, yeah, you know, you mind just giving us a little brief description, you know, of that encounter, you know, to share with the audience? Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
There's a little lake here in town, and we're teenagers, all the girls, we'd like go to the backside of the lake and, you know, go swimming at night or whatever. And on more than one occasion, we hear, like, really weird sounds, and there'd be, like, rocks thrown at us. And honestly, we just, you know, pretty much assumed it was the boys trying to get us to run out of the scares and run out of the lake naked type of thing. And we were skinny dipping, and but we're, you know, coast kids, so we just hollered back, and there'd be, you know, all kinds of noise, and it happened several times, but, you know, we just, like I said, assumed it was the boys, and after this has happened several times, I had mentioned something to my brother, and our family is pretty known for, you know, pranks and practical jokes and stuff. So he came down from Portland and was going to find the trail that we figured they were coming from over from one of the houses on the other side of the lake. And he was going to booby trap it to teach them a lesson for, you know, the boys for picking on us. And I don't know what my brother encountered, but, you know, my brother, he was like 6'5", and, you know, just out of the military and everything, very avid outdoorsman. Yeah. He came out of there. It was the first time I'd never seen my brother scared of anything. But whatever he encountered, he came out. He was white as a ghost, and he absolutely forbade me and my girlfriends for ever going back in that area. And, you know, we didn't know what's going on, but, you know, if my brother said, no, you don't go there. So we sort of listened for a while. And then another night there's houses back on the south end of the lake now. But at the time it was just all woods and everything. And we're right at the foothills, you know, of the coast range. And we'd all gone driving back. We're, you know, off work, and we're headed back to the little party spot, and one of our friends was like, who would put a pile of hay over there? And we were kind of looking and everything, and whatever this was got up and within a couple steps was off in the woods, and, you know, we all kind of freaked out and went back into town. But there was, like, a bunch of different things like that that happened around the lake. And a few years ago, I moved back into the area, and we bought a house up behind the lake. There's nights where there could be these, like, really loud screams, and I actually thought it was kind of one of the younger neighbors. I figured they're partying or whatever, but that would be, like, right up above our house and always yelling back and forth and hearing, you know, knocks, which I kind of wrote off to somebody chopping wood or something like that.
Yeah.
And we went, I went to take my dogs up the log road next to our house, and, you know, they're up ahead of me, and I can't really describe the sound, but I tell you what, my dogs turned tail and ran, I mean, just about bowled me over running back to the house. They were scared.
Yeah,
I kind of had the spine going up, I had the hair on the spine going up, and,
yeah.
You know,
and Robin,
my dogs,
I mean,
if they're running for all hell, this fat chick was going to run for all hell too. We were out of there.
Yeah, and Robin, I was going to mention that we talked on the phone, and you've been a hunter. You've been a hunter for a long time. You're born and raised out here. You know a lot of different animals and sounds and whatnot. But I mean, can you give us a little background on just your upbringing and just the, you know, like I said, you've been a hunter.
A hunter for decades, and growing up, we always spent, we'd camp out for like whole summers. My dad was an Eagle Scout leader. My brothers were Eagle Scouts. So we've grown up in the outdoors, you know. You know, and I always idolized my older brothers, so I learned to track at a very early age before I even really knew it was going to benefit me.
Yeah.
You know, it was something, if my brothers did it, I had to do it too. And it was always, learned a lot, learned to, Dad had taught us all how to separate out sounds and stuff, and the one thing I can tell you, the noisiest animal in the woods would be squirrels.
Yeah,
they can make the biggest, you'll be going along, everything will be all quiet, and they'll throw things at you, they'll throw pine cones at you, and they make a noise that will just make you jump out of your skin, and then you look up and see these two little squirrels and feel stupid, you know. You think something big's coming after you, and it's just squirrels up in the tree.
Yeah.
But so I do know how to differentiate different sounds and track and everything like that, and, what an elk sounds like, heard a cougar scream. And then there's the sensation, when you spend a lot of time in the woods, you learn to trust your instincts about, you kind of get that feeling in your spine or your gut that says, you're in danger and
right.
You become
it's almost a wall.
More aware.
It's almost a wall. You know, you hit this wall and you just know, for spending so much time in the woods, whether you're a hunter or a hiker, you spend enough time in the woods, you get this instinctual feeling sometimes, not all the time, but instinctual feeling sometimes that it's like a wall. You just know that you shouldn't pass this, or there's some sort of danger, or there's something going on that's not normal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you gotta trust that fear trigger, when you're out in the woods, which is, and I think all of us, whether, you're animals or, you're human, you put something out that, and my dad used to call it silent communication, that, even though we're not speaking or we might just be sitting still, we're still communicating. Animals sense us, they smell us, and we smell them, just not as well as they can, us. But
right.
If, you tune into it, when you spend a lot of time out there, you tune into what's around you and the sensations, because that's what's going to keep you safe.
Right, and your brother went out to this area, your original encounter in 1970. He went out to this area, and he came back. What was his appearance? He was generally frightened and whatnot and told you not to go back out there, right?
Yeah, he was white, the color was drained from him, and he was shaking. And, this is like one of the, the toughest guys, nothing scares him, or if it did, you'd never know it. He was always a calm voice of reason. And, if you're, in heightened situations, so to see him that shook up,
I mean, you know, I've not never been one to do what I'm told to do.
Yeah.
But to see him that shook up, I just knew that there was no argument about it, and, you know,
yeah,
I was not going to go back there.
has he elaborated since that time on what he maybe saw or encountered or what he found?
Well, my brother passed away, but shortly before he passed away, you know, we were talking about it, and, you know, and I asked him what, you know, I said, you know, just like one of those things, you know, you're reminiscing, and, you know, we're talking about things, and I'm like, what did you do, like run into a big bear or something? And he was like, sissy, that was no bear. He goes, I don't know what it was, that it was way taller than I was, and it was way bigger than me. And like I said, my brother was like 6'5", you know, he was in high school, he was, quarterback, very athletic. He was retired military, you know. And he's a lot older than I am. So he goes, I don't know what it was, but he goes, it wasn't human, and it sure as the hell wasn't a bear.
That's pretty profound. And I'm, sorry to hear about your brother's passing and whatnot. But God bless him for, sharing that with you and whatnot. To me, that's, what he saw was, spending that much time out, being born and raised and doing what he had done and, the Eagle Scouts and whatnot. To me, that what else could it be? That, your brother being 6'5", seeing that it was that much bigger than him, we're talking pretty big creature, and for him to be scared like that, being a hunter and whatnot out there, what else could it be?
I have to say, like in the 70s, I mean, we never, at least down here, we never heard anything about Bigfoot or something, and, so that was like, nothing that would be in our mind, because we just, hadn't heard anything about it, but we've always known that there's something more out there.
Yeah, and you've been in, you having, like Gunner, Gunner's involved with the BFRO, and he's probably heard multiple encounters in those areas. You come in contact with other people as well, right, that have had encounters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think amongst ourselves, it's one of those things that, you freely talk about, but, like, a lot of my friends, nobody really wants to say a lot, because it's like, gosh, if we really do find something or enough reports, it's like, Fish and Game is going to come in and shut down more of our hunting area. And that's why, honestly, a lot of people that I know don't want to talk about it or their experiences, because, we're subsistence hunters. We hunt because, we need to feed our families. And, we're not trophy hunters or anything like that. So it's important that things stay open. And I think that's kind of one of the one of the things that keeps a lot of people around here from really, truly, openly talking about their experiences.
No, I totally agree. There's so many encounters that are shared, but I think there's far more encounters and experiences that are not shared because, one, people are afraid to talk about it because they're afraid of being belittled and made fun of, and two, in your circumstance, and I don't have any part in this, but a lot, you're right, they're afraid that Fish and Game will come in or, there'll be some sort of interaction where it's going to really put, when you guys hunt, you're hunting to put food on the table.
That's correct.
Yeah. It's not just a game. It's not a game. It's not something you do, it is fun. I enjoy it. But it's something you do out of necessity.
It's fun until you have to pack it out, then the work begins.
Exactly. Yeah. But it's done out of necessity. It's something that you've done since you were a little girl to this day, and it's something, that a lot of people recognize that, It's kind of like a fisherman, you know, that finds that money, that honey hole. You know, they don't want to tell a whole lot of people about that honey hole, because if they tell people that, oh, I catch salmon and steelhead out of this particular spot, then it's going to be raided and there'll be no more fish or, you know, the catch there.
Yeah, or, you know, everybody and their dog's going to be there and
mess it up.
Take away from the experience. I mean, those of us that spend as much time in the outdoors as we do, you know, like I said, most of us, everybody around here where I live, they hunt out of necessity. And but we also spend a lot of time in the woods. You know, it's a very spiritual place for all of us. And then we don't, you know, we're not too happy when you get a lot of outsiders coming in that don't respect the land, don't respect, and you know that happens. You know, and I'll say it. You know, you get. You know, a lot of city people come in, it's like, oh, hey, we're going to do this, and they really don't know what they're doing, and, you know, they leave a really bad footprint behind that we end up cleaning up. So I think people, you know, keep quiet about stuff, you know. We don't want a lot of outside hunters. This is, you know, very steep and hard country to hunt, and I think I was telling you about the, you know, the year that the guy from the newspaper did this whole thing, laid out everybody's camp, and we had lots of people. We spent more time looking for lost people, and you know, which we could find and bring them out of the woods, than we actually did hunting. You know, so it's you know, it's a frustration point. So everybody likes to kind of keep quiet about things.
Yeah, and you know that stands the reason, and you know a lot of people think that. Everything that's shared online is the that's it. That, you know, people, if they have an encounter, they're going to share it. They're going to tell their story. They're going to spread it out there. But that's quite the opposite. A lot of times, you know, you get these areas like where you're at, rugged terrain. You got generations of people hunting and fishing. They don't want outsiders to come into this area and just trample it and scare off the game. They, you know, even if they had the most awesome Bigfoot encounter, Sasquatch encounter, they're probably, you know, not going to share it with the general public. Maybe with their own, you know, the little home groups out there, you know, the people that live there, they might share it, and maybe not. But they don't want to ruin something good, you know. I mean, and it really is good. And, you know, I wouldn't personally want, you know, I got my hunting spots, my Bigfoot spots, and my fishing spots. I don't invite just, you know, I don't just throw it out there online for everybody to go out there and trample on and head out to, because they're my spots and I like them and I enjoy the quiet times and I enjoy it being, you know, untrampled upon.
And it's only in things like, you know, the Bigfoot shows, you know, and you know, this year there's a couple different ones on TV.
Right.
And yeah, you know, I'm a bartender, so you know, I have a lot of interaction with public. And I know there's a lot of college-age kids that, you know, they're city kids, but also they decide, hey, we're going to go down and, you know, we're going to go find Bigfoot, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've actually run into that, and, you know, and I start talking to them, I'm like, well, are those the boots you're going to wear? Yeah, not a good idea. Are those the clothes you're going to, you know, they are not prepared, but they get this idea that, oh, we can just go and, you know, walk through the woods and it's going to be easy peasy. Well, you know, it's not. You know, this isn't like, you know, Multnomah Falls where there's marked trails. You need to know the land. You need to, you know, you need to know the areas. You need to have maps, you know.
If you get hurt in these areas, you're in trouble.
Yeah. There's areas that I know it's like we stay away. If we see certain holes up there where the elk go, it's like, well, you know what, bye-bye. If we don't forget, you know, we aren't going to be able to get out of there. And if we get hurt down there, the sheriff's department, their rescue team, they aren't going to go into that hole to come after us. We know that, but people not from the area, they don't know that. And you know, we look at things and say, oh, yeah, I can walk that. Well, once they actually get there and find out that, hey, that ridge top is that we're walking on is only about 2 feet wide, you know, and 1,500 feet down, you know, they get themselves
in situations that are very dangerous, you know. And,
yep, absolutely. Robin, how many, you've talked to a lot of people in that area, and you've grown up in this area. How many people have you talked to that have had encounters or something strange happen to them?
Just about anybody that hunts around here, spends any time up in the woods, you know. Everybody's had some sort of an encounter where they just, you know, down to things where, man, I have no idea what it was. You know, they eliminated, you know, everything that they know, like cougars and, you know, different sounds. And, you know, they, it's like, okay, what could it be? And they aren't going to come right out and say, hey, I think that was, you know, a Sasquatch. What they're, you know, but they will say, it's like, man, that's nothing I've heard before.
Right. They're of sound mind, and they've had experience out in the field to know and to differentiate between what is what, you know. And, to me, that's some of the best evidence out there is hunters and people that have lived in areas for a certain amount, you know, a long amount of time that know the area and know the animals. And when they come across something unknown like Sasquatch, I mean, it is what it is, you know. What else could it be, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I'm talking, like, the people I'm talking about, I mean, not only are they hunters, but they're loggers, and, you know, a lot of them are third, fourth generation loggers, and, you know, so it's, you know, this is where they've grown up, you know, that's our yard, so, you know, you spend so much time in the area, I mean, you know, you know what's what, and,
Well, no, and I really appreciate you, you know, you invited me out to go with a camp out with you guys, and I look forward to doing that, and I hope we actually, I can fulfill that and make it out there and hang out with you guys, and with, especially with some of the people that have had encounters out there, and, you know, there is no expert in this field. I learned from a lot of different people, and I gained so much from people that have had encounters, especially ones that, you know, before the TV shows, before Bigfoot became real popular. I love following people and learning stuff from them that, like yourself, Robin, that have had stuff happen to them, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, whatever, and in areas like that where you're at, that I know it's a hot spot, and, you know, to me, I can learn so much from people like you and you know, go from there. It really adds to my database. It really adds to my concepts of what Bigfoot is and what it could possibly be. And it really adds a backbone to my research personally. So, you know, I really love hearing stuff like this, you know. And your brother's, you know.
Is this all in Oregon?
Yeah, it's all in Oregon, yeah.
Nice.
The areas we've been talking about tonight mainly consist of the Oregon coast, northwest specifically, which is another hot area for encounters and stories. It's got a well-known history. But, you know, like Robin touched about tonight, a lot of people do not share their encounters for specific reasons, you know, and that's obvious. And
yeah,
I think
who are you going to tell it to, I guess?
Well, yeah, who are you going to tell it to? And you got to have reasons to tell it to people. And then you got to look at, if you tell somebody, what are the repercussions after telling that? What's it going to do? Sometimes, you know, nothing. You know, it's a story. But at the same time, if you have, you know, especially in the area that Robin's at, that it's got a history, and she's already, you know, told us of, you know, the news crew coming through there and what happened after that, you know. I mean,
what's
they
development
had all
like
sorts
in Oregon? Are they still developing neighborhoods and houses? And?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're still developing lots of houses. Beaverton, where I live, you know, it's kind of suburb. They're building houses left and right. It's slowed down, I think, because of the economy. And there's a lot of logging going on. But really, it's a needle in a haystack haystack when it comes to some of these areas. I mean, what are your thoughts, Robin?
Well, it's a needle in the haystack if you don't know your way. Like, I can get on a log road, and I can, because I know the country, I can take log roads all the way into the valley there, you know. And it's such vast country that it's easy, you know. I think there's certain areas and certain times of the year where you're going to be very fortunate in what you're going to find as far as, you know, hearing things and finding different signs. But it's really easy to disappear, you know. There's so much area that literally, you know, has not been touched. Maybe the last time was like when they went through and planted trees, you know, after the big burn. You know, there's a lot of areas that have just not been touched since then. And then there's no real human, you know, a lot of humans around. So it kind of amazes me sometimes knowing how much, you know, country there is, and then yet still having so much just on the outskirts of town, and so close. And, you know, it's just like, I always think about that. It's like, you know, something like all the woods in the world, and you got to be on the hill right above my house, really? But it can be a needle in the haystack.
Yeah, I agree, it can be. And I meant needle in the haystack by, you know, that there is such a, with the amount of development and stuff, there's still so much forest and vastness that most humans don't even step foot in. You know, I go out in some areas that I see no trace of humans at all, let alone, you know, it's hard to find animal traces sometimes, but, you know, it's trying to find anything out in some of these areas is a joke. It's just near impossible. But even with the development going on, it's really not, you know, we could say there's a lot of development going on, but it's in with incorporated areas kind of building upon itself.
There's just so much wild land, and there, you know, always will be. I mean, you have a lot of development up in, you know, the valley where you're at and everything like that, but between here and there, you know, it's just massive square miles of nothing but, you know, mountains and forests.
Yeah, exactly.
The national forests and stuff like that can't be developed. And that's one part of the U.S. that is very vast. You know, when you look at maps, there are some big areas out there that are parts of the national forest and whatnot.
Yep,
obviously, and mountains and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've got national forest and state forest, you know, coming together and incorporating a lot of the, you know, a lot of the land. It's open public land, and then you have your timber companies and areas that are gated off and whatnot, but there's still, gosh, just so much land, so much to explore.
So much to explore,
and Robin, really thank you for joining us tonight and sharing your encounters and, you know, your experiences and whatnot. We're about done here. But, hey, Robin, love to have you on the show down the road. And I can't wait to hang out with you. Stay in touch, please. I want to come out and meet you in person and, learn a little bit about...
You're 89 miles away, dude. Come down anytime.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Yep. And you have a good night, Robin. Thank you so much.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Gunner, as well, and everyone.